So one of the most famous betrayals in history is Julius Caesar. You probably know the story. He was stabbed 23 times, I think, by many assassins. We don't know exactly how many assassins gathered together to kill him. And when he was bleeding profusely, he was still on his feet, he stumbled towards his closest friend, Brutus. And he says, "Et tu, Brute? And you, Brutus?" Only to be stabbed by him too, his closest friend. "And you, Brutus," sums up Caesar's shock and hurt at being betrayed by his best friend. And our saying, "being stabbed in the back," probably originates in that time. And this is what happened to Jesus. Jesus was stabbed in the back by his best friend, by Peter. Peter was someone who everyone, including Peter himself, thought would stand by him to the end. I asked my daughter, who's 21, for a contemporary example of denial and betrayal. I said, "I need something that's a bit more contemporary than Julius Caesar." And she told me the story of the singer Mariah Carey, who some of you may know, I don't know. And she was, Mariah Carey was asked in an interview what she thought of other female singers. And they went through several singers. What do you think of them? What's your opinion? And so she was asked about Beyoncé. And she said, "Oh, Beyoncé, she's a super talented singer. And she's a great friend of mine, a great woman." And then she was asked what she thought of J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez. And Mariah Carey said, "J-Lo? I don't think I know her." That's harsh. That's harsh. She's not quite as famous as Beyoncé, but still, it's harsh. But in response, when Mariah Carey was singing at an awards ceremony, J-Lo was seen scrolling through her Twitter feed on her phone instead of watching the singer. And she said afterwards, "the song was going on a bit." In the Gospel of John, it's a brilliantly told story of betrayal. But it's one that can happen anywhere, at any time. And we are likely to be the perpetrators as much as the victims. I doubt that many of us would end up playing the chief priests, Annas or Caiaphas or Pilate. They may have been the ones that in the end they gave Jesus the death sentence, but a large part of him had already died before he got to that point, when his friends betrayed him, when Judas betrayed him, and then Peter, his closest friend. And those, I think, are the roles with our names on. Not the enemies, but the friends, the frenemies. And whenever someone famous gets in trouble, this is one of the first things the press focus on. What do their friends do? What do they say? Do they support her? Do they tell the reporters? Unfortunately, they'd seen this trouble coming for a long time. One of the worst things a friend can say is more or less what Peter said. "We weren't friends, exactly. More acquaintances, that would be a better word. Actually, we just worked together. For the same company, really, I mean. Not together exactly, we just worked near each other. My desk was near his. I really don't know him at all." When people are in trouble, they need their friends to stand with them. But sometimes they wash their hands of them or stab them in the back. It's hard for us to understand why Peter betrays Jesus, as only in the scene before he tried to defend Jesus. He'd cut the ear off the servant who'd come. It was one of the servants of the police who'd come to arrest him. And earlier in John, in chapter 6, the other disciples had turned away and because it was just too hard following Jesus. And Jesus said to the 12, "Do you wish to go away as well? Is it too difficult?" And Simon Peter answered him with the beautiful words, "Lord, to whom can we go? you have the words of eternal life. We've come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. And Peter was the first to have this insight about who Jesus was. And in chapter 13, Peter promised to lay down his life for Jesus, saying, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I'll lay down my life for you. And Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for me? Very truly, I tell you, before the cock crows, you will have denied me three times. We all have our breaking point, our Achilles heel. And Peter is going to discover his. But Jesus knew in advance, knew already, it was going to happen. Chapter 18 in John is beautifully scripted. It's like a skillful film, cutting between scenes. Peter's let into the courtyard by the other disciple, it says. We're not told his name, but we presume it's John. And John knows someone in the household, so he's able to go into the inner court where Jesus is, leaving Peter on his own. And that's the trouble. And the servant girl asks him, you're not one of his followers as well, are you? And it's a leading question. It begs a negative answer. No, of course not, Peter responds. It's easily done, saying what people expect of us, going along with them. Then Peter stood round the fire, warming his hands, waiting to hear news of Jesus, thinking no one else would recognise him. And then the scene shifts inside to Jesus' interrogation in the chief priest's palace. And the chief priest is asking him about truth and lies. And Jesus says, I've always spoken the truth openly. I've not said anything in secret. And then he's struck in the face for continuing to tell the truth to people. At this point, I think Jesus could still have denied God and probably escaped death. But he didn't. Even though he was being abandoned and betrayed by his friends, he chose not to. Jesus shows up people's behaviour in the light of his truth, his truth telling, his truth acting. And he knew that Peter, as he'd foretold at that very moment, as he was standing up for truth, was denying him. How alone he must have felt. His best friend denies him. And then we cut back again to the scene outside in the courtyard. And there's several servants round the fire now. And they can see Peter's face in the shadow. And he looks a bit like a Galilean, probably racially profiling him. And a chorus of voices ask him, you aren't one of his disciples too, are you? As if they're disbelieving that one of Jesus' disciples could hang around in these circumstances. Their leader was on trial for his life. Of course they'd have scarpered. They'd have run away. Another question that invites a negative answer. You're not with him, are you? I am not, says Peter, following the crowd. And the third time, it's a relative of the man who Peter had cut his ear off, who had seen him in the garden. He knew who he was. He remembered his face. And obviously, he had an axe to grind with him. He challenged Peter, didn't I see you with him, with Jesus, in the garden? And here there's an opportunity for Peter to redeem himself, to say, yes, I was with him. But he's gone too far at this point. It's hard to say when you've said it wasn't me twice. It's hard to admit, yes, it really was me. Again, he denies Jesus. And at that moment, the rooster crows. And it's the alarm that brings Peter to his senses, realising what he's done. In the other Gospels, they report Peter at this point cursing and crying and being really upset. But John just leaves silence. He doesn't tell us how he reacts. And Peter knows in denying Jesus, he's condemned himself. And the rooster's crow brings the morning, but Peter's still in darkness. We've seen through, in reading through John, light and darkness are very important. And the details are always given for a reason. It's like a good cinematographer. If you like films, you can think of the themes of light and darkness. If you like the Star Wars film, there's the theme of light and darkness going on in there, the contrast between the dark side and the force. And that's a bit like John's Gospel. He uses that light and darkness to help us get the atmosphere of what's going on. From chapter 1, we remember John says, the light shines in the darkness. The darkness hasn't overcome it. And later Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. So when Judas goes out to betray Jesus, and John writes, it was night, it's significant. We know that evil has come into his life, has overshadowed him. And when Peter's described as trying to get warm in the shadows of the charcoal fire, it's important. Charcoal fires give off warmth, but little light. So Peter's in that twilight place, between light and darkness. He's getting closer to the fire, but that will show him up, show his face, show him to be a follower of Jesus. But it also reveals his weakness, his cowardice. In the half light, separated from Jesus, Peter encounters temptation that he doesn't have the resources to resist. So why does he betray Jesus? Is it a weak moment for an impetuous man? Is he scared for his life? Perhaps he thought he would be arrested too. Is he scared of what people will think and just saying what's expected of him? It's strange because he never worried about those things before. He was always impetuous and outspoken. Peter's always been brave. He's alone now, though, among the hostile crowd. The other disciples have gone. John's in the inner court. And Peter was used to being the leader. He was used to having an audience. Used to being the brave one. The one who spoke first, who acted first. But alone, he lost his courage. Jesus was gone too, and Peter was used to having Jesus to rely on, his teacher, his master, his friend, who encouraged him, who cajoled him, who reprimanded him. But now he's gone. Peter had never been cowardly before, but now he is when he's on his own. Getting close to Jesus, the source of warmth and light, doesn't just keep us warm, but it shines a light into our lives. And that can be uncomfortable. In the presence of Jesus, his integrity, our own pretense is exposed. In the presence of his constancy and truth, our cowardice is brought to light. If Jesus holds up truth and light up to us, what does it show in our lives? In this country, we're rarely, if ever, asked, are you a follower of Jesus? Though I know some of you are from countries where it's much harder, where people might ask you that. It's much harder to be a believer. I know Hiromi has said, who's from Japan, has said that it's a disadvantage to be a Christian in Japan, that you can suffer prejudice in jobs, at university, in life. It's hard if you own up and say, yes, I follow him. And in other places, we know it can cost people family relationships if they say, yes, I'm a follower of Jesus, I'm his friend. And in some countries, it can cost them their lives to own up to being a follower of Jesus. Perhaps we can understand Peter's reaction more if we think about the cost of owning up to being a believer. Jesus shows up our weaknesses and our cowardice in much less dramatic ways. Maybe not standing with our friends when they're in trouble. Maybe not defending people when they're criticised. Maybe in continuing grudges and arguments in families for years. Maybe in agreeing with other people's comments, their racist or sexist or homophobic comments. Seemingly small things, but Jesus sees when we deny him and we deny our brothers and sisters. Peter was in darkness, experiencing something of the darkness that Jesus felt when he went to the cross. But he wasn't left in darkness. Though we're only halfway through Lent, we can have a little spoiler this morning about the end of the story. After the cross, after the third day, after the resurrection, early in the morning, when it was getting light and the darkness was being left behind, a stranger calls to the disciples to put down their nets again. They'd fished all night, they'd caught nothing. Put them down again, he says. And this stranger lights a charcoal fire on the beach and begins to cook some fish on it. And on recognising the stranger, Peter leaps into the water from the boat to greet him. He's back as his impetuous self. But he has no doubt, even after his betrayal, that Jesus will be pleased to see him. And after eating, Peter gets the chance to repent, to be forgiven, to be restored around another fire that echoes the fire of his betrayal. Together with Jesus, the light of the world. And there are three questions that Jesus has that parallel the three denials. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he gets the chance to answer in the affirmative this time. To say, yes, Lord, you know that I love you, instead of saying no. Maybe Peter thought, come on, Jesus, I've answered this question already. Why do I have to keep answering? But he denied three times, so he needs to be forgiven three times. He has to be given the opportunity to affirm his love three times. He has to hear that Jesus trusts him for the future three times. And he's given a new threefold ministry as well. Feed my lamb, says Jesus. Take care of my sheep and feed my sheep. We can deny Jesus, not usually in big ways, but in small ways, and deny our brothers and sisters. But being with Jesus requires the honesty to admit that and say, yes, it was me. The light of Jesus shines on our frailty and our wrongness. It shows up what we're like, that we're not always the best of friends. And sometimes that's painful. Hopefully it leads us to confession, to the foot of the cross. But that isn't the end of it, isn't even the point of it. Every confession of sin ends with an announcement of grace. While Peter was denying Jesus, Jesus was being faithful so that he could restore each one of us. And it began with Peter.